It's a great pleasure to give this talk. Remotely, but still, I will try my best. So I'm gonna talk about saturons. These are really fascinating objects that I will explain. Okay, so here are some of my helpers and collaborators, mostly my ex, mostly graduate students, ex graduate students or graduate students. And yeah, so the initially, so the goal, the big goal was to understand how black holes work in storing information. And then to understand this storage in terms of some underlying universal phenomena. But then it got so interesting, I almost forgot about black holes. So therefore, in this, so in some sense, I'm gonna distance myself from black holes, but at the same time, constantly there will be connection with them, as you can see. It's so obvious that doesn't really require much explanation. Okay, so now in black hole physics, situation currently is very interesting, peculiar, I would say. And so there are. So on one hand, there are certain facts, I mean, certain statements about black holes that are commonly accepted. So everybody agrees on, almost everybody agrees on those. But on the other hand, there is no agreement whatsoever or no consensus on what is the microscopic physics behind this phenomenon. Okay. So here I'm listing three main ones, and then down the road I'm going to discuss others. Okay, so these are sometimes they are called black hole mysteries. So the first one is famous Bekenstein-Hogging entropy, which scales like area in the units of, okay, here I'm ignoring factor of four, etc., in units of Newton's constant and or which is the same as Planck scale. So this is a huge entropy. So already, I don't know, if you have a solar mass black hole, it's like 10 to the 77 or something like that. So it's a huge entropy. Of course, they carry a semi-classically information horizon. But then you have this feature that you have this object that has this huge entropy, and it decays, it evaporates, but evaporates nearly thermally. And so the information is not retrieved up until this time scale, which sometimes we call page time. Actually, this is not the time scale of the retrieval. This is the time scale of the beginning, of the start of decoding of information. Okay, so as you can see, this is an extraordinary long time scale. It's macroscopically long, it's proportional to black hole entropy. Okay. So now the question, so the question that I tried to ask was, how special are black holes? Okay. Now this sounds like an obvious question, and we could have asked this question like long ago, but actually was never asked this question, at least not in the way I will present. And probably the reason was that it sounded obvious that black holes are really special, because if you think of a, I don't know, of an apple and then a black hole of the same mass or the same size, obviously they are very different. But of course, at the same time, this is a meaningless comparison, because in order to compare different objects, we must bring them to the same universality class. And so what is this universality class? And so my idea was that this should be a microstate degeneracy. Microstate degeneracy permitted, the maximal microstate degeneracy permitted by applicability of quantum field theoretic description. Okay. So in other words, here are the key formulas. So then the following turns out. Okay. So it turns out that suppose you have a quantum field theory with certain running coupling alpha. Okay. Now, quantum field theory, as we know very well, is defined by the degrees of freedom and by the rules of the game that these degrees of freedom obey. So, degrees of freedom and the coupling. And so, Now you can ask this following question. Suppose in this theory you form a localized object. This could be anything. Could be soliton, could be this table, whatever. And you ask the following question, what's the maximal microstate entropy, microstate degeneracy, so that this object can have within the validity of the given quantum field theoretic description of this of this degrees of freedom? And so it turns out that the answer, there is an answer which can be presented in two different forms. Okay, the first form is that this microstate degeneracy, in other words, here I'm talking about simply logarithm out of degenerate microstates. Okay, so the entropy is bounded by the coupling, the running coupling evaluated at distance r, at the scale r. Or equivalently, and this is more interesting from the point of black holes, this is more interesting. It is bounded by the area in units of Goldstone scale, Goldstone coupling. Now, what Goldstone, you can ask? So the Goldstone of spontaneously broken Poincaré symmetry. Okay, so this is a universal Goldstone excitation that is present in for arbitrary object that exists at bound state. And so it's unambiguously defined. So the scale is unambiguously defined for any system. And so it turns out that the maximal entropy actually is the area measured in units of this Goldstone scale. So Goldstone coupling, or you can trade it for Goldstone scale. Okay, so now, so this is the maximal entropy, okay? Now, what happens if you try to violate this entropy is that there is always a very clear criterion. Why? Several criteria, actually. Why the quantum field theoretic description within given degrees of freedom breaks down, okay? So, usually there is one-to-one correspondence with scattering amplitudes and unitarization of scattering amplitudes, etc. And so the objects that saturate this bound, this is just a bound. And bound is defined unambiguously in any QFT. But the objects most interesting are the objects that saturate this bound. And so I call them saturons, these objects. And so by now we have explored many different examples of saturons. So they can come in many different forms. They can come like baryons or bound states or other bound states or solitons, et cetera, et cetera. And so these saturons, they have certain universal properties. Now, before going to saturons, I want to say, okay, obviously this form of the saturon entropy is strikingly similar to Wittgenstein-Hawking entropy of black hole, although I'm not assuming any gravity. And actually, in most of the examples I'm going to consider, there is no gravity. These are renormalizable quantum field theories. And so this is strikingly similar because its area is proportional to the area. But actually, this is not just a similarity. It's actually identity, because black hole entropy indeed has this form. And we don't, unfortunately, we never wrote it in that form. But that's a fact. Why? Because for a black hole, the Poincaré Goldstone, it's very easy to understand why Poincaré Goldstone, what is the scale of Poincaré Goldstone for a black hole. So if you have a black hole and you have an asymptotic observer, so the black hole breaks Poincaré invariance, obviously, breaks translations, Lorentz boosts, etc. And the order parameter is the expectation value of the canonical normalized graviton field. And this expectation value reaches the Planck mass. This happens only for a black hole. Okay? So, of course, other objects like planets or stars, they also break Poincaré invariance spontaneously. But the graviton expectation value for those objects never reaches the Planck scale. Okay, so this is a unique property of a black hole. Basically, we can define, in fact, we could have defined the black hole in this way. We could have said black hole is an object that breaks Poincaré symmetry at the Planck scale, and that would be a correct statement. And so therefore, the Goldstone scale of Poincaré Goldstone is the Planck mass for a black hole. And now you can understand immediately that this expression of the Sacheron entropy, black hole entropy, is a particular manifestation of this much more general formula. This is a gravitational case of that formula. Okay. And this is, of course, very, very interesting. Now, other thing is I want to compare this QFT bound with the Bekenstein bound on entropy. So you may remember that Bekenstein has this famous bound on entropy of a system. Now, of course, Bekenstein bound has no reference to QFT validity, okay? No reference to strong coupling or anything like that. And actually, it is interesting that there are certain well-defined cases in which saturation of this bound, of this alpha bound or area law bound, also implies saturation of the Bekenstein bound. However, not always, and actually these bounds turn out to be more universal and more stringent. So, for example, there are certain cases in which Bekenstein bound cannot be defined. For instance, for Euclidean configurations. For Euclidean configurations like instantons, there is no energy, so you cannot just define Bekenstein bound. But for Euclidean configurations, there's always a coupling. This bound is well defined. And there is always a Poincaré Goldstone, even in Euclidean space. And so therefore, I will mostly use this form of the bound. In those cases in which saturation of QFT bounds also is equivalent to Bekenstein bound, in those cases you can understand this as manifestation of QFT justification of Bekenstein bound in those cases. Okay, so you can also think in this way. Now the interesting thing is that you can say, okay, fine, I have a saturated object, but how far this analogy or connection or similarity between black hole and Saturn goes? And it turns out that it goes full length. In particular, of course, first thing is entropy. This I already said. So Saturn entropy has literally the same area form. It's just the Goldstone decay constant. In the case of black hole, is a Planck mass. So Saturn also exhibits a classical information horizon. Their decay rate, in semi-classical limit, their decay rate is thermal. And so the temperature is inverse of their size. And the time scale of information retrieval, the start of information retrieval, is again what you would say full exactly the same expression as Page's time. Now, the advantage is that for saturons, you don't have these complications. For non-gravitational saturons, let's say, you don't have these complications of some ambiguity in calculations or in quantum gravity, etc. Here, you can compute these things in randomizable theories. And in some cases, those are exactly calculable, actually. Okay, so now I will do probably the best thing for the presentation is I will give you one example of a Saturn. Again, this is just a example. We are not aware of any exception from those rules that we said. But okay, so here's an example of a Saturn. So in form of a vacuum bubble. Now, why this form is interesting in form of a vacuum bubble? Because it has a lot of implications for cosmology, in particular for dark matter, also primordial black holes, gravitational waves, so on and so on. So therefore, here is an example of a renormalizable, weakly interacting theory with SUN symmetry. Okay, so we have this SUN symmetry with the field phi in the adjoint representation, and you have a renormalizable potential. So now I wrote this potential in the form. This is more general, except I wrote it in the form when the macu are exactly degenerate. Now, for the discussion that I'm giving, this is not essential. it just simplifies the picture. Okay, so you have SUN theory with the joint representation. Alpha is the coupling constant, okay? And so this has many degenerate minima, okay? Many local minima, as I said, they don't have to be degenerate. Now notice the following thing, that the validity of QFT, domain of applicability, in other words, the domain in which you can treat phi as a valid degree of freedom, QFT degree of freedom, is bounded by this condition that alpha has to be less or equal to 1 over n. Okay, so basically, for those of you that are familiar with Toft coupling in large N QCD, here, this is not QCD, this is just a theory of a scalar field. Yeah, but it's basically the Toft coupling must be less than 1. Okay, less or equal to 1. And so this is the condition. Now, as we'll see, this condition translates as a condition of saturation on the microstate, degeneracy of the vacuum bubble. Now, as I said, in this theory we have many degenerate minima, and so correspondingly we have vacuum bubbles, all right? Because you can form domain walls between the two, and you can form closed domain walls between this vacua, okay? And so those domain walls, some of those domain walls are saturons. Some of those bubbles, vacuum bubbles, are saturons. They saturate the bubble. Okay, so let's try to understand how the saturation happens. Okay, so here I'm choosing a simple example of this vacuum bubble, in which we have the following. This is a vacuum bubble in yellow. In the exterior of the bubble, in the asymptotic vacuum, so we have SUN symmetric vacuum. So the expectation value of the field phi is 0. And in the interior, the phi is non-zero, and symmetry is broken down to a subgroup. I chose here the vacuum bubble with the subgroup SUN minus 1, okay? SUN minus 1 cross U1. Now, because of this, in the interior of the bubble, we have of order n Goldstone gapless excitations, Goldstone excitations. Now, these are not Poincaré Goldstones. So, in other words, we should not misunderstand the story. So, the Poincaré Goldstone is a marker because that's the most prominent Goldstone mode that exists always. But the degeneracy or the information storage in a black hole, in a saturon, this is not due to Poincaré Goldstone. There are other degrees of freedom. And in this particular case, we have a bunch of Goldstone modes of SUN symmetry, okay? So now, if you want in terms of a joint representation, this is the form of the saturation bubble. So now you can have bubbles that are oscillatory, or you can also make them stationary a la cue balls, okay? So it doesn't matter, you can choose both. Okay, here I will consider the example when bubble for definiteness is stationary, not oscillatory, okay? So for this, what you do, you in the interior of the bubble here, you spin in the internal space, phi, by a broken generator, okay? You spin it in the internal space with certain frequency. Okay, now, so in this way, you can stabilize the bubble, okay? So you can stationarize the bubble. Now, irrespectively whether bubble is stationary or oscillatory, that doesn't matter, we can evaluate micro degeneracy of this bubble. And the micro degeneracy of this bubble, you can understand where it is coming from. You can understand it in several different languages. For example, you can understand it in this language of Goldstone degeneracy of the broken symmetry vacuum in the interior of the bubble. You can also understand from the point of view of representation under which this bubble transforms and so on. Okay, so you can evaluate it easily, and you can get the formula, which is... and the bubble, of course, represents, from the quantum field theoretic perspective, bubble represents a coherent state, okay? So it's a soliton, it's a coherent state, in which you have certain occupation number of constituents, okay? So the in particular gallstone moths, okay? So gallstone moths, they have occupation number, so they should not be confused with the with N of flavor. So this is number of gallstone species, okay? This is given here, and N is the flavor. So N is the SUN flavor, okay? So N is the gallstone number of gallstone species. You can evaluate this entropy, and the expression is can be written in this form. So it's proportional to N. This is important. And then there's a logarithmic function. Actually, this logarithmic function reaches the maximum within the validity of QFT when actually it's of order one, okay? So now, okay, so here is a here's just a numerical simulation of the bubble. One is oscillatory, another one is stationary. You can see it. So this is the left-hand one is oscillatory and the other one is stationary. Now, oscillatory bubbles, they are macroscopically long-lived, okay? So therefore, the fact that they are oscillatory, they can perfectly be saturated, even though they are oscillatory, okay? Well, this is okay, more in colors. So spins is the oscillatory one and the spinning one. Okay, so now let's go down and check these properties of the bubbles of the. So first, let's check the information horizon. Okay.
Yeah.
In information horizon. Sorry.
Is it possible to put angular momentum in the system? Does it change things?
Yeah, I will discuss the angular momentum a little bit later. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So actually, there is a very interesting story with angular momentum, right? So, but let me go step by step. So, saturons in semi-classical limit also have information horizon. Now, in order to show this, we must do the correct mapping. Okay. So, what is semi-classical limit for saturon? A semi-classical limit is when you take alpha to zero, but you fix the size of a saturon. And the correspondingly the frequency, which is related with the size, and Toft coupling is finite. So it's literally like a Toft limit, okay? For a saturon, is a Toft limit. And of course, once you do this simultaneously, you can see that this automatically f goes to infinity. The mass of the quanta is finite and goes to infinity. And in this limit, saturons possess a strict information horizon. So in other words, you see what is happening is that. You have this saturated object. You need to, and it carries some information. Why? Because there are different goldstone flavors excited in the interior. So it carries this huge information. But now there is no way by any scattering experiment or any experiment whatsoever to get this information out, okay? To read it out. Why? Because in this limit, effectively, those gapless goldstone excitations, effectively, they decouple. So there is no way to differentiate their flavor, which carries the quantum information. Okay?
Can I so, have a question? Other...
Yes, sure.
Is this the no-Hertz theorem of this model?
Yeah, this is, well, you can, yeah, exactly. This can, you can understand, yeah, thank you for putting this way. So you can understand this as a no-Hertz theorem of saturon. That's right. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So, and you can see, for example, by the way, here is the precisely the in this semi-classical limit in this limit, you can see why there is no here, because, for example, you can store information internally in some goldstone wave, but this information is confined to the interior. As you can see, there is no hair outside. Of course, this is like this simulation, numerical simulation is done for finite n. Of course, we cannot do a simulation for infinite n. But even for finite but small n, it's already extraordinary how this horizon forms, really. Okay. Okay. So another thing is, there is. Another feature which makes it strikingly similar to black holes is that they evaporate, okay? So if quantum numbers are low, they evaporate. And they evaporate, and the up to 1/n corrections, which are absent in the semi-classical limit because n goes to infinity, information stays inside if n is infinite. But for finite n, information retrieval takes place. And so information retrieval time is exactly like pages time, literally, okay? But now, for example, now, as I said, remarkable thing about this is that you can do these computations also in exactly solvable models. For example, here with Otari Sathelashvili, we did it for Grosnivier model. So Grosnivier model is a two-dimensional model, okay, of large M. So it was very, it's a remarkable model. Exactly, so the nice thing about it is that it's exactly solvable at large N. And so it has bound states. So bound states, this model, okay? The fermionic bound states. And actually what we have seen that actually the one out of these bound states, actually the highest one, represents a saturon automatically. So in Grosnivier, the largest, highest bound state is a saturon. And then you can compute there, essentially you can compute everything. And you can prove, you can see that this is what is happening in one plus one dimensional model. In one plus one dimensions, so this has nothing to do with gravity, but the formulas are exactly the same. And so you have Page's time, you have thermality of radiation and so on. So, I mean, of course it's a seeming thermality because all the states are pure. So initially you start with pure states and then you have radiation, but it takes one over N to distinguish this radiation from exactly thermal spectrum. So deviations from thermality are encoded in 1/n, which are very small, okay? So therefore, there is a complete correspondence between black holes and saturons. And okay, so here this listed what I just said in terms of entropy, scaling, in terms of evaporation and temperature, and in terms of information retrieval time, Goldstone horizon, information horizon, and so on. Now I want to go to precisely, there was this question here about spin, okay? And there's a very interesting story related with the spin. So this is first suggested in our paper with Florian Kuhnel and Michael Zantedeschi. So what is the point here? Okay, so for example, here this video shows a numerical simulation of saturons that merge and produce vorticity, certain vortex, and spin. Okay, so now what is the story? Now in black hole physics, there's a well-known relation that black holes, as you know, black holes, they have maximal spin, okay? And actually the maximal spin of a black hole is given by the entropy of a black hole. Now, again, it's the same thing. We know that for black holes, that's the case, but we don't know why that's the case, okay? What is the microscopic explanation for this? For black holes, we don't know. Now, it turns out that there is exactly the same maximal spin formula for saturons. So in other words, the maximal spin of saturon is proportional to its entropy, okay? However, in the case of saturons, the reason, microscopic reason, we know what it is. And it turns out to be vorticity. And the vorticity is what puts the limit on the maximal spin of a saturon, and simultaneously, it is related with the entropy. And the question is, now basically the point is that the vortex that forms because of this spin has limited capacity to maintain the saturon, okay? And so if you try to spin it higher, either the saturon solution no longer exists, okay, or saturon state no longer exists, or it will require even more energy, and so you have to increase the entropy, okay? And the question is, okay, so now I want to make a very clear distinction between facts. So up until here, they were facts, okay? So all these things well, calculable in randomizable theories, etc. Now I want to add speculation about this. So given this striking similarity between the maximal spin of Saturons and maximal spin of black holes, so we conjectured that maybe the similar thing is happening in a black hole. So in other words, somehow internally, there is some kind of vortex structure that develops for highly spinning black holes. And that's what prevents increase of the spin unless you increase the entropy, okay? And okay, again, I want to make it very clear that unlike anything I said before, this is a conjecture. Maybe true, may not be true. We don't know. But it's worth looking for it. It's worth looking for observational signatures of this conjecture, okay? Now, in other words, what should be the observational signature? So qualitatively, you would expect that depending whether, when you form a spinning black hole in the merger, depending whether there is an underlying vortex structure or not, the output of the energy may be different, okay? And so we can check this qualitative, at least we can check this explicitly on Saturons and then make this qualitative connection to black hole case. Okay, so therefore we studied merger of cubo-like Saturons, the ones that I described. And indeed we discovered, so with Oleg Kaikov and Florian Kuhnel and Juan Valbuena and Michael Zantedeschi, so indeed, we discovered that something interesting is going on. So what is going on? So here is a toy model first, 2+1 dimensional, just to make the things simpler. So here is a 2+1 dimensional Saturon state, cubo-like state, Saturon in 2+1 dimensions. And so they merge. And then there are three regimes. So there is first regime is green line, which case no vortex is formed. As you can see, when the no vortex is formed, the output of the energy is immediate. Okay, this is this green line. So the Saturons merge, they form a remnant Saturon, and so the energy output is almost immediate. The second regime is the red line, which is when vortex forms, but then it after some time gets ejected. And in that case, there is a delay in the energy output. Okay, so this is this red curve. Okay, and you can see, so there is a delay and then there is output of energy in the red case. And again, you finally form some remnant. And then there is a blue line when there is a vortex formed, which is either pretty long lived, okay? And as you can see, in that case, the energy output is very little because the vortex sucks energy in, okay? So this is what we are observing in this picture. And now the And we have this, of course, evolution of energy and spin, et cetera. And in this, there is a correlation between them.
May I ask, like, what's the difference between the different curves in terms of initial condition that you're setting?
Exactly. Right. The impact parameter. You choose. So in other words, here, in this picture, right? So as I said, this is a toy model, 2+1 dimensional case. And then you choose impact parameter or other. So for example, you can do different, of course, you can do different variational problems. You can, for instance, fix the energy, but change the impact parameter, okay? So for example, you do that. And then depending on the impact parameter, and actually in the case of, in 2+1 dimensional case, it also depends, the vortex formation also depends on a relative, what is called twist, okay? that is about 10%. There is a sort of twist angle within 10% that ends up with the vortex.
Yeah, can you hear us, sir?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay,
hello,
we lost last 15 seconds, last 20 seconds.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me now?
Now, yes, I think the connection is a bit unstable, but okay, let's see if let's continue. Okay.
Okay, I don't know, it's very strange. It shows me that here connection is good, but okay, sorry. So let me repeat then. So what I said is that there are initial conditions, depending on initial conditions, you may or may not form the vortex. Actually, in this 2+1 dimensional picture, it turns out that it depends on the impact parameter and also on the parameter of twist. There is this relative twist, depends on that. So in other words, here, of course, in different initial conditions, they give you different outcome. But here we are trying to capture correlation between given energy release, okay, whatever energy is, and the outcome, whether you form vortex or not, okay? I mean, was this connection okay now?
Yeah, now it's worse.
Okay. All right. Okay. Sorry. Please tell me if there'll be any interruption in the correction. I apologize. And so these are these curves. Let me just go down. Okay. So then it turns out, yeah, not surprisingly, a similar thing is happening in 3+1 dimensions. So in 3+1 dimensions, again, we have a very similar correlation between the output of energy and vorticity. Of course, this connection should be taken with a grain of salt, because the connection is at best qualitative. Obviously, here we cannot claim that the other features are similar to black holes, but it's only a qualitative point. But qualitative feature must be pretty robust. In other words, if the maximal spin indeed is somehow correlated with the vorticity, then it's natural to expect that the similar thing should be happening in black holes. Black holes also should be in different regimes of energy output. Okay. Okay. So now let me discuss another cool application of saturons, because saturons actually give you a new type of cosmological phase transition, which is very interesting. So in other words, they give you a new type of a first order phase transition. Okay. Now, what is this? In cosmology, or in general in thermal field theory, we discuss phase transitions which are of the first order, right? Which proceed via a bubble nucleation. So these phase transitions, usually, if the phase transition is strongly first order, the bubble nucleation is exponentially suppressed. Okay, so it's suppressed by this three-dimensional Euclidean action, which is actually gives the energy of a bubble, of a static bubble, okay, and ratio of temperature. And this quantity is huge, and so the suppression is exponentially large. Now, because of this, the bubbles are rare. And when they meet each other, you know, they are already big and classical. But the saturons, they offer fundamentally different story, which I described in my paper from last year. And the story is the following. Now, think about the ordinary phase transition in terms of entropy. Okay, so the first step is to rethink the exponential suppression factor of Linde, for example, of Linde's paper, in terms of entropy. What is happening? So you have the following picture. You have a thermal bath, and this thermal bath carries certain entropy, right? So there is an entropy of the thermal bath. Now, when the radius of a critical bubble, within the radius of a critical bubble, the thermal energy becomes equal to the bubble energy or exceeds bubble energy, you can form a bubble by thermal fluctuation or by tunneling, basically. But the in Linde's case and in ordinary cases, the entropy of the thermal bath is much larger than the entropy of the bubble that you form. Why? Because bubble is a soliton essentially with zero degeneracy, no degeneracy, very, very little degeneracy. Okay, very little. And so you pay the entropy price. And this is the way you can understand this suppression. Essentially, this is the entropy of radiation because you are going from high entropy state to lower entropy state. And that's always costly in entropy. But in case of saturon, actually the entropy of a saturon can exceed, and usually it exceeds, hugely exceeds the entropy of the thermal bath, of the thermal bubble. And so correspondingly, the suppression, a would-be suppression because of this tunneling, is overcompensated by the saturon entropy. And so what happens is that at certain optimal temperature, when the condition of energy is met, when the energy of the thermal bubble becomes equal to the saturon, suppose you have a theory, right? So in this theory, you have a saturon bubble. But of course, saturon bubble has fixed parameters. It has certain size, it has certain mass, it has certain entropy, right? Given by the coupling, inverse coupling, etc. And now you are in the early universe and the universe cools down. And at some point, the conditions are met that the thermal energy becomes equal to the saturon energy of the saturon bubble. And simultaneously, the entropy of the saturon bubble exceeds the entropy of thermal bath. So in that case, what happens is that you start producing the saturon bubbles explosively. It's a literally an entropy-driven phase transition, okay? And so we are, of course, studying this further because what happens is that effectively you occupy the volume with a new phase, not because of the expansion of the bubble, but because of simply explosive productions of more and more saturon bubbles, okay, which then overlap. So it's a very different picture. And literally, it's a new type of a phase transition, which is entropy-assisted phase transition, basically, saturon phase transition. And of course, it has it has a bunch of implications. And again, the nice thing about saturon physics is that it takes place at the weak coupling. So weaker, the better, because the entropy goes like inverse coupling. So weaker is the coupling, it's better. And so you can, the relation between optimal temperature at which you form a saturon and the entropy of the thermal bath, or entropy of the saturon. So if you have a saturon in theory with a given entropy, that of course is a fixed parameter because that's a solution of the theory, state of the theory and the size, these are fixed parameters, then the optimal temperature is given by this. Actually, it's inverse the size of the saturon given by the quarter, by fourth root from the entropy, okay? And so this is the picture. Of course, as I said, they have a bunch of cosmological implications because they can offer a new type of macroscopic dark matter because they can be formed at extremely low temperature. Huge saturons can be formed. And so this is a completely new type of dark matter. By the way, and this cannot happen for black holes. And this is very interesting. So because despite the fact that black holes are saturons, and they also carry maximal entropy, gravitational in theory with gravity. Black holes cannot be formed by this type of mechanism. Why? Because you can see that the condition when the black hole, when the entropy of the thermal bath matches the entropy of a black hole, is only met for black holes of the horizon size. But of course, at the horizon size, you have horizon anyway. So you already have a horizon there. And so you cannot form small black holes smaller than the horizon, by this effect. But saturons you can. Why? Because saturons can be produced in a renormalizable theory where these parameters are matched perfectly nicely, okay? Because normal renormalizable interaction can be much stronger than gravitational interaction for given saturon. And then, of course, they can create gravitational waves, primordial black holes, and they can create all possible phase transitions more efficient. And okay, so this has to be explored, but it has many implications. Okay, so now one more feature.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. They ask if objects has to be like spherical, symmetric, or like can be like a string. Or
yeah. Right. That's exactly. So that's yeah. So strictly speaking, so here, of course, because these are vacuum bubbles, and I only study spherically symmetric ones, because usually those are the ones that have least suppression in the standard. The bounds is the symmetric bounds has the least suppression, because the usual story. So I studied those, and I wanted to compensate their suppression. But in principle, yeah, you can have saturons of the different type of geometry, not necessarily exactly spherically symmetric. So in other words, to say more precisely, you don't need to necessarily tunnel into the spherically symmetric configuration. You may have a configuration which is, although it's not spherically symmetric, it has sufficiently high entropy, it's a saturation, so that it can be produced, okay? So, yeah. So in principle, no. The answer is that no, you don't necessarily need spherical symmetry. Mm-hmm.
So, the related question is I can set up a situation. I have some background field, and as I increase the background field, at some point I transition from, let's say, like a second order to a first order phase transition, right?
Yes.
Like, is it related in somehow, like, to your story or not?
Yes, I mean, well, okay. As I said, the saturation here, what it does, it contributes in the way that it universally compensates the standard Euclidean action suppression. Okay, so you have Euclidean action suppression, and saturon by default compensates it. Okay, so in that case, the bounds. So we can also think in terms of the instanton. So in one of my first papers, I also introduced this concept for the instanton. In other words, when you have a tunneling process, right, you materialize certain configuration. So that configuration is a saturon, let's say. Then corresponding instanton is also a saturon, okay? Because it saturates the bound on entropy in the Euclidean space, okay? And so so basically, that's the feature of a saturon. So the bounds, once it becomes a saturon, it starts to be extremely efficient. And so now how you get to that point, yeah, it's completely model dependent, but you can get to that point in many different ways. So you can get to that point through thermal phase transition. You can even get there through quantum phase transition. I'm going to discuss, if I have time, I have a couple of next slides, when you get to this point by quantum phase transition. Actually, this will be very similar to what you are asking now. We have done this analysis actually in exactly solvable model. So I'll show you in two transparencies, literally, in two slides. And then come back and ask me if this doesn't answer your question. So, but before going there, I want to say that these saturons also, they have very interesting way of understanding quantum field theoretic phenomena. Okay, some of those phenomena are known already, but the saturon gives a very new, different view of understanding those. In particular, for example, right? The processes in quantum field theory, we know, and there are very strong arguments, that whenever you have a process of creating many quanta out of few, so sort of, let's say, 2-to-n transition, okay, this transition is exponentially suppressed for each particular microstate. Okay, so in other words, if you have a state of n particles, some kind of a, I don't know what, coherent state, for example, or whatever, then in 2-to-n transition, this is exponentially suppressed. This is absolutely reliable, because this is happening at the point of optimal truncation. So if theory makes sense, then 2-to-n transitions for each particular microstate are exponentially suppressed. But if you have a creation of a saturon, then as you can see, because saturon entropy is precisely 1 over alpha. So by the way, this is a very, also is very instructive. That's why, by the way, I derived one of this form of the bound. Actually, that you can reverse engineer it. So the way I arrived to this bound, one of the arguments, there are several arguments that they all give you the same thing, but is this, because if in a theory you have an object that exceeds this entropy, and 1 over alpha, then this object will violate unitarity, which is of course not possible within sensible quantum field theory, in 2-to-n transition, because the suppression is exponent minus 1 over alpha at the point of optimal truncation. And so essentially, so first you can use this as understanding my bound that I presented at the beginning, but also this tells you that many phenomena you can understand in this way. Actually, one of the phenomena, understand, not prove or something, but understand, for example, confinement. You can view in this beautiful way. You can understand the necessity of confinement. Not really, I mean, not the mathematical proof, but the fact that QCD has to be a confining theory, you can understand from this point of view, okay? And so on. So this is, it's a very interesting story. Now, and so basically, this is what I'm saying. So we can understand the necessity of the entry. So in most of the objects, and reversely, most of the objects, they have very little entropy, much lower than the 1 over alpha. And correspondingly, they are produced with exponentially suppressed rate. Okay, then finally, let me go to this many-body system, and this will answer this last question. Actually, we simulated the saturated phase transition in a very simple system model with no relativistic quantum field theory, actually. Yeah, relativity from this point of view was not important, in which you have n bosons on a ring. Okay, so you have bosonic field. This is a creation, these are creation annihilation operators. You have a bosonic field on a ring. Okay, now originally we used this model as a toy model for a black hole as a critical condensate with Cesar Gomez, but this is not what I'm talking about here. I'm just using this model as a model of saturation. Okay, so the model is the same. By the way, that's why it's also interesting from the black hole point of view. And so what happens in this theory is that you have certain phase transition which you can trigger a quantum phase transition, non-thermal, and it can happen at zero temperature, the quantum phase transition between the uniform condensate and the soliton. And you get a saturated bubble. Okay, so in that case, there's a saturated bubble. Now you can do this analytically. You can understand that this is happening analytically, and then we solve it numerically. And so you can do analytically, you can do Bogoliubov transformation, and you can see that there are gapless modes emerging. And then if the coupling is higher than critical, the Bogoliubov frequencies become imaginary. And so you can bring the system to this transition point by manipulating externally. And then there is a transition. And what happens is that the saturation, the saturons, so in this way, what happens is that you bring the system to the phase transition, quantum phase transition, where it forms a saturon. And then you can then understand various parameters about the saturon. For example, one very interesting parameter about the saturon was that the entanglement time that it takes becomes maximally entangled. This is logarithmic in n. So this ringed a bell in connection with this conjecture about scrambling, but I will not push this further. I want to stay within terminology of this entanglement. So in other words, and it's proportional to Lyapunov exponent. Lyapunov exponent is there because of the phase transition. So now, to me, I think this actually also is connected with the scrambling conjecture, okay? So that the saturated systems are also faster scramblers, okay? So it's the conjecture should be Actually, the correct form of the conjecture, not correct form, but no, there is nothing incorrect here. The black holes, yes, they are fast scramblers, but if you perturb them, but it expands the class of scramblers. So cyclotrons are fast scramblers. So any type of cyclotron is a fast scrambler, not just the black hole. You don't need to have a black hole necessarily, okay? And that, this is very interesting because this extends this conjecture beyond black holes, all right? Okay? And all right, so I think I should converge slowly.
And I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
How do you expect the geometry would emerge from this cyclotron model?
Well, I mean, cyclotrons, so in case of non-gravitational cyclotrons, there is a very well-defined classical limit, and they represent solutions of classical equations in the classical limit. So therefore, so classically, I mean, what the geometry is a classical limit of gravity. Okay, so the way you can, if we are thinking in terms of gravity, right? In terms of gravity, for example, gravitational wave, that's a classical limit of the coherent state of gravitons. And so gravitational wave, you can think of it as geometry, as perturbation of geometry. But in reality, in quantum theory, it's a coherent state of gravitons, which becomes classical in certain limit. So it's exactly the same for cyclotrons. So for cyclotrons, the classical field, which then defines geometry for all those Goldstone modes, et cetera, right? Emerges in the classical limit, yeah, as a limit of the coherent state. So if you have, for instance, in this theory with vacuum bubble, that's just a solution of classical equations of motion in the classical limit. Okay? Okay?
Thanks.
All right. So, yeah, I should converge because I'm out of time. So let me go straight to the conclusions. I had some movies, but never mind about those. Okay, so just to conclude, the outlook is what we are learning is that the black hole information properties, they are not specific to gravity. And they are universal characteristics of the phenomenon of saturation. Maximal microstate degeneracy within the validity of QFT description. And now this universality allows us to understand the microscopic mechanisms, right? Mechanics behind this quantum information storage in black holes. In other words, the point is very simple. You have class of objects that strikingly has the same property, and those objects are calculable, and they repeat all the properties of a black hole. And so we can use those objects as laboratories for black holes. So things that we cannot calculate in case of black holes, but we can calculate for saturons, we can use these to predict new properties of black holes. Okay, check the conjectures, for example, fast scrambling conjecture. Literally, you can check it explicitly for the saturon. That's what happens. Okay, and predict new properties. For example, vorticity that was never suspected before for black holes, or conjecture new properties. Now, then, of course, saturons have implications in quantum field theory. And by the way, I want to mention, I didn't have time to discuss this, but there is one very interesting candidate of saturon. Actually, there is a saturon in standard model of particle physics, actually. We wrote a paper with Rajivanu Gopalan and myself claiming and showing that the so-called color glass condensate in QCD is actually a saturated state. It's a saturon. And so it has strikingly similar properties to black holes also because of that. And the color glass condensate in QCD is something real. Actually, it's experimentally, it has been observed experimentally and stuff like this. And so, yeah, this shows us that the saturons, they exist in nature. It's not that this is some kind, not just some kind of hypothesis. And so, of course, this is very interesting. And yeah, then they predict new phenomena in cosmology and so on. Okay, I will finish here. And yeah, this is, it's a great fun. It's a new type of yeah, it's a new field that, yeah, it's very interesting. Okay, if there are any questions, I'll be very happy to take them. I mean, no questions.
Are there questions?
Yeah, hi. I have a question about the hypothesis that black hole spin is due to vorticity. So I'm a bit confused what kind of statement we should make here. We can take numerical GR, for example, right, and study collision of Kerr black holes, simulate and study results, right? We can simulate different impact parameters and so on. Now, would you say that these results that we get within classical GR could be explained by this notion of internal vorticity? Or would you say that this internal vorticity could give you predictions which are different from the predictions of classical GR or something in between?
Yeah, thanks very much, yes. Yeah, that's the correct question. So that's also the question we are asking to ourselves. So yes, it can go indeed. You basically answered the question already. So it can go in both ways. So on one hand, vorticity may be the underlying microscopic reason for certain phenomena that are already observed. Classically, of course, this is classical. That's the whole point of this, is that this vorticity is a macroscopic phenomenon. Of course, it has microscopic mechanism underlying, but the manifestation of it is macroscopic. Okay, in particular, this energy outputs, etc. We're talking here about big black holes, large black holes. So yeah, indeed, and also maybe this can predict something new. Okay, which for example, yeah, this, but. Yeah, so the question is, I mean, of course, we cannot rule out the fact that black holes exist in GR and there is nothing inconsistent with them. That's for sure. I'm not going to change GR or anything like that, obviously. So for sure, GR works. And the hope is that this thinking in terms of vorticity and this energy output, correlation between the energy output and vorticity, for observationally, this simply tells you, of course, observationally, you cannot explore the inner structure of a black hole, obviously. But this simply tells you that, yes, there may be some different types of regimes of the energy output. And these could be manifestation of this inner structure of a black hole, macroscopic inner structure. Okay. So, yeah, so that's there. But as I said, I want to make it very clear that this part is a conjecture, obviously. So this is not something that we conjecture that maybe similar thing is taking place in a black hole, and that's why the entropy, the maximal the connection between maximal spin and the entropy is explained. In a sense, this is not surprising because you have this fact that there is a object and you cannot violate this condition, this relation between maximal spin and the entropy. Now, obviously, there must be some internal structure which prevents you from spinning black hole faster, higher than than its entropy. So that's not surprising. Presumably, there is some inner macroscopic, inner reason for this. And yeah, so whether it's vorticity or something else, of course, that's a conjecture, but there must be something, obviously. Okay.
Yeah. So at the center of the vortex, the symmetry is restored, right?
Well, at the center of the vortex, the symmetry is depends on in which for which vortex. For example, for this toy model, yes, for this toy model, you have the order. So remember that the symmetry is non-abelian. So we are in non-abelian theory. And so what happens there is that particular generator, yeah, the component that breaks that particular generator, of course, should vanish inside that vortex, okay? That's correct.
Like when you do it for gravity. Like, what's the analog for that?
Sorry, say it again, repeat the question. So
what's what's the analog of like the symmetry getting restored at the vortex center if you think of black hole as carrying some vorticity? Is there like a
I mean you have vortices in ordinary condensed matter, right? So it's not that you can have vorticity when you have, for example, some field that is carrying a space-time quantum, so it may break space-time symmetries, so you can have vorticity due to breaking of space-time symmetries, etc., etc. So for example, I don't want to jump to some particular microscopic explanation of black holes, because this talk is precisely not to enter there, but to only give you the connection with saturons. But the way I would envisage that, if you're asking me this, for example, Cesar Gomez and I myself, we have this idea that we have this theory of a black hole, that black hole actually is a saturated critical condensate or a coherent state of gravitons. Okay, so from there, it's not terribly surprising that if you have a saturated coherent state, high occupation number state of soft gravitons, when you are spinning it, you can produce vorticity. Now, for scalars, analog models of scalars, you can see that. And so if you have scalar gravity, sort of scalar coherent state, a scalar black hole type thing, okay, there you can see that you can easily produce vorticity. And actually, the connection is map would be between Goldstones and gravitons. So, I mean, the Goldstones of SUN, Goldstone modes, will be mapped on excitations of gravitons, okay? Different angular momentum excitations of gravitons. So this will be the dictionary. But again, I mean, this is a hand waving. Since you are asking me a question, I'm giving a hand waving intuitive argument. None of this has been proven or anything like that. I'm just saying this is the way intuitively I would think about it. Okay.
Yeah. So I have a question about this analogy. With the horizon and Hawking temperature. Yeah, how far it goes? I'm just trying to understand. So, for example, for the horizon. I imagine like a situation when I throw something into the saturon and basically it does not come back as it is, because it interacts, as I understand, inside with these Goldstone modes. But like in the case of gravity, really, like anything I throw never comes back, right? There is a probability it would go through, right? That it may or may not scatter on this Goldstone. So, horizon?
Yeah. Yeah, very good, very good. This is that's a very good that is the question that precisely. This is the important thing that has to be explained. So, in other words, when I said horizon, I was very specific saying that this is an information horizon. Okay, so obviously, I mean that sounds obvious. I mean, obviously, if you have a saturon made out of one field, you can have introduced in your theory field that simply is not interacting with that field. Okay, so for example, in this theory, suppose I introduce a scalar that carries no SUN quantum number whatsoever. Okay, of course, such a scalar can just go through. There is absolutely no problem. The question is whether this scalar will take away any information that you can decode. That's what I'm saying. And the answer is no. That's the precise point, because information is encoded in SUN quantum numbers, and the no probe can take away information that is encoded in SUN quantum numbers because Goldstones decouple in that limit. Individual Goldstones, they decouple in that limit. Only collective effect remains. So therefore, in this case, any information stored in Goldstone excitations becomes inaccessible. So that's what Goldstone horizon is. Now, in case of gravity, that is accompanied by a generic horizon. Why? Because gravity interacts with everyone. So there is no particle. You cannot have a particle which doesn't interact with gravity. And so all particles carry quantum numbers that are accessible the space-time quantum numbers. And of course, therefore, in case of black hole, when you lock the information in gravitons, you lock information in everything. And correspondingly, by consistency, you cannot have a gravitational saturon which does not develop universal horizon. But for a particular saturon in particular theory, you don't need that, because the interactions are not universal. Gauge interactions or Goldstone interactions, they are only experienced by those charges, those particles that are charged under those. But also information can only be encoded in those. And so, yeah, it's a fully legitimate information horizon. There is complete one-to-one mapping.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see. And also about the temperature, actually, what's the calculation, to see the thermal spectrum? I mean, how you are getting thermal spectrum, and actually thermal spectrum of what? Yeah.
For example. Sure. So that's what. Sorry, what was this?
What is radiated? Okay, confined inside, actually.
Yeah, that's right. So the nice illustration of this is given by this 1+1-dimensional model of Gros Nivier. So here, what do you have? You have this saturon is a large n-bound state, okay? And so it interacts with pions, all right? And so you have massless pions. And so what happens is that the fermions in the bound state, they rescatter into pions, okay? So for instance, here you have, here I'm encoding this information pictorially. So suppose you have a red color fermion, or you can call it quark or whatever you want to call it, red color fermion, a blue color fermion, green color fermion, and so on. So now you encode information in sequence of colors. Okay, so this is your information. By using the sequence of colors, you can construct a quantum message, literally. Okay, so you have this quantum message. Now, what happens is that the pairs of fermions rescatter, and they rescatter into pions, and then pions leave. Okay, and so you can calculate the pion spectrum. Now, it's not surprising that you will get thermal spectrum. Why? Because the only characteristics in large N is the radius of a bound state. There is no other characteristics. You already understand that the spectrum is, and of course you can also understand that because these are fermions with softness R. This is what you get, and indeed this is what you get, because you can compute rescattering rates for, let's say, two fermions into pion, and then high order into pion. Now, for example, you can immediately see why you will have Boltzmann suppression in pions. Okay, why? Because you have fermions, and these fermions have softness scale of R, 1/R. And now, suppose you want to produce a very energetic pion. In order to produce a very energetic pion, you have to annihilate many fermions. Okay. But annihilation of many fermions gives you an amplitude n to 2 or n to few, okay? That amplitude is always exponentially suppressed precisely, and you can see that it's exactly suppressed like exponent, the energy of this number of those fermions that you have to sacrifice to a pion, and their momentum transfer, the softness scalar. So what you would normally interpret as Boltzmann suppression, you recover from large N particle amplitudes. So this is one of the very important messages that I want to put it through, that the thermality, that you think that something is thermal because it has the spectrum when, you know, peak is somewhere at softness and then high energy output is suppressed, that is also a feature of large N amplitudes in QFT. And so in this particular case, this is what gives you the thermality, seeming thermality. Of course, there is no temperature here. This is just a QFT computation, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, and so on. You can repeat this. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
So if there are no more questions, maybe we have time for a quick question from Zoom.
Can I have another one? The vertices, I think, in the B condensation, we have a threshold radius after which I think the vertices are unstable. What is the gravitational counterpart for it? Why we should have unstable vertices after having a bigger size, if my statement is correct at all?
So, sorry, so you meant vertices in which system? In cubos?
In B condensation, Bose-Einstein condensation. We have superfluidity, for instance.
Yeah.
If we have a bigger, very big vertices, they are unstable.
No, sure. And you're asking what would be the counterpart here?
The gravitational counterpart. Why? What is the meaning of it? Geometrically, for instance, why we should...
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Very good. So here, so the counter... Okay, let me put this... This picture is even more. So when you... So here, actually, this point that you don't... So that fact that vortex is limited by... The spin is limited by... The vortex is the one that limits the spin. That, as I said, we are not coming from gravitational side. It's actually much clearer visible in solitons, okay? So let me explain in solitons. So what happens is this. For example, in this spinning cubo-like solitons, right? So you have field, right? Field profile. So internally you have SUN symmetry broken, okay? But and so externally SUN symmetry is restored, is unbroken. And so now you spin this, and then you can ask this question: how can I give a spin to this configuration? So to that configuration, spin automatically means that you have a vortex, okay? Right? So this is statement number one. Now, do the following thing. Let's start with a huge bubble. Now, huge bubble is undersaturated. Why? Because as I said, maybe I go to, maybe picture this one. This one. So the huge bubble, so you, if you take huge bubble will be undersaturated. Why? Because as I said, maximal entropy of the bubble is given by n. Okay, so maximal degeneracy of the bubble is n times a log. So when you take very large bubble, you are not gaining in entropy, but you are losing a lot in the energy and in the coupling and so on. Okay, so therefore, let's start with a large bubble. In large bubble, I can afford certain vortices, okay? Let's say I put vortex, only one vortex. Now I can start approaching this bubble towards saturation. When saturation happens, when the size of the bubble is given by the Compton wavelength of the quanta that formed them. This is the important thing, okay? So basically this saturated bubble is the one in which the radius and the frequency and the mass, they are all the same order. So it has only one scale, saturated bubble. But now you can understand why vortex has limits, because the thickness of the vortex is also given by the same parameter M. So therefore, if bubble is large, you can afford many, many vortices there, okay? Or vortex with higher winding number, no problem, because bubble is large and the size of the vortex is fixed by the Compton wavelength. But if vortex is saturated, there is only fixed order one vortex. Sorry, if bubble is saturated, means that its size is given by the Compton wavelength, then only order one vortices you can fit there, okay? And that's it. You cannot maintain any further vorticity. Now, but vorticity is what gives you the spin, okay? And therefore, the spin, vorticity, and the saturation, they are locked, okay? In the case of this solitons. So now, as I said, we don't know whether the same is true about black holes. That's a conjecture. Okay, so there I'm not entering. But presumably something similar is happening for black holes if this conjecture is correct, okay? So,
okay.
So in other words, if you want to make analogy with the spinning condensed matter system, yeah, you can think of the sample, which has so you have a vortex of typical size, and if you make the sample smaller and smaller and smaller, it's, at some point you cannot no longer fit the vortex, okay? Because vortex requires certain minimal size. So It's similar here, except the size is set by the saturation. Okay, so in other words, not every spinning condensate is a saturated condensate. Only the condensates of certain size, which matches their entropy, are the saturated ones, and those can only afford certain finite number of vortices. Okay, so this is the connection.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, then we can thank the speaker.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for the talk.